Hey, how's it going, everybody? It's your host, Dylan Conroy, back with another edition of the Ad Podcast. And today I'm super excited. We have Tony Billmayer, who's the Chief Marketing Officer of Show Me Organics, which is a fast-growing cannabis holding company with a bunch of brands in the Missouri area, such as Vivid and a few others that Tony can walk us through. But Tony, super excited to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
I appreciate you having me. It's very cool to be here.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Cool. So the first thing I'd love to just get into is a little bit about your backstory and your career. You've had a pretty storied career as a San Francisco ad guy, you know, 8 years at huge shops like GSP and BBDO. You worked on some award-winning campaigns for companies like Jolly Rancher, Wells Fargo, Golden State Warriors. So, you know, I would just like to talk a little bit about your background, and then we'll get into some of the details around your pivot in moving back to your home state of Missouri and really being part of the kind of ground level of consumer cannabis culture and brand building out in Missouri. So, but you want to walk us through a little bit of the early days?
Yeah, sounds good. I guess where it starts is kind of where it ends. I started in Missouri. Went to journalism school at the University of Missouri and graduated in 2013. And from there, really just wanted to get to the biggest, best agency as quickly as I could. So I did do some retail. First was at Integer in Chicago and worked there for a few years. So had a couple years in Chicago before I jumped to San Francisco, and then ended up at BBDO working on Wells Fargo, and then the whole fraudulent account scandal happened in about 2016, 17, around there. And so at that point, I kind of realized I had the front seat to some really, you know, amazing learning opportunities. I was in some the rooms where the CMO was making decision on what the communication points were going to be and how we were going to move forward out of, you know, out of that mess. And it was eye opening to me. And I kind of that was probably my first exposure to, you know, that high level of thinking. And I got really, you know, interested in that sort of the crisis management of it, but also just understanding, you know, how to manage large groups of agencies and partners and all of that together. So that was with BBDO. I also, had a good run in San Francisco working at Goodby, and lastly at Eric and Coleman. And all of that was, the work was some of the, you know, exactly what I was hoping to do when I got into the business was, you know, funny. We did some good candy advertising, as you mentioned, for Hershey and Jolly Rancher and Almond Joy. But also, in the end, got to work really closely with a bunch of CMOs at startups at Eric and Coleman. And so Landing and was the first of those. Lucid Motors was another. But got to see up close some of the problems that CMOs were dealing with, and really got to advise, you know, CMOs for the first time in that role. And that's when kind of gave me the idea that hopefully I could do something in that capacity. And, you know, the move to Missouri was a little serendipitous. You know, I don't make light of COVID, but, you know, that's the reason, that was the impetus for us to move back. We were, my fiance and I were in San Francisco and both working happily there. And, you know, things changed quickly during COVID, reevaluate priorities and all that. So moved close to family back home in Missouri. And at that time, was dipping my toe and had a couple of interviews at cannabis companies, but was just dipping my toe in the possibility of going to the brand side in cannabis. And I had about as, you know, novice a view of the industry as your average person in America, and didn't realize the intricacies of each state's rules and the, you know, the viability of each industry separately. And each state is, you know, its own kind of industry and market. Yeah. And so learning a little bit more about that as I had, you know, I met with a couple of California cannabis companies, but it ultimately landed at Show Me Organics because my CEO, Boston Dickerson, did a really great job of sort of articulating the potential of the Missouri market and, you know, the potential for, you know, our company as sort of a very lean operating, you know, kind of boots on the ground. The decision makers are, you know, young, and we are very attuned to what the market and what the customers want. And so it's been an amazing ride. And I think, you know, the sort of full circle moving back to Missouri where I started, I had always thought that, you know, maybe I would move back someday, but I really, like, you know, have been an advocate for St. Louis for a long time and really always saw the potential for the city to come back. And, you know, it's palpable when you're here because the infrastructure is really amazing. And, you know, it was thriving at one point. You can feel that. And so the potential for cannabis to play a role in the same way that beer and Anheuser-Busch played a role in the market here was kind of the idea in my head of, well, that would be very cool to do. And so it all kind of worked out. We started as just a lab in the Missouri market, so doing medical and only making concentrates and edibles and you know, manufactured products. And right at the week before we in Missouri voted on recreational cannabis, our company closed on what we believe to be the nicest facility for cultivation growing in the state. So we went from being a very scrappy, small operator to, and had made a name for ourselves and our brands in that capacity. And then ultimately now we have actually the best product to back it up because we were able to acquire this amazing facility right before it passed for recreational. So everything has kind of worked out almost too well over the last couple of years. It hasn't felt that way. You know, it's in cannabis, everything is harder than it needs to be. And so that's been a learning process for me for sure. And it's been an amazing ride so far.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Yeah. And I think I read somewhere, in addition to, you know, so maybe some of that surreptitious planning that you guys did on the acquisition of that cultivation space, that basically the way that the laws worked in Missouri is that if you were already in the medical cannabis space, you were first in line, so to speak, for retail delivery and you know, all of the various licenses that they were giving out for recreational. So I imagine that kind of put you guys, and I think I read somewhere you guys, you know, already had 200,000 clients from the medical side. So it gave you kind of a great opportunity on the licensing side, but then a built-in customer base to then expand from.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And it actually was just a straight conversion from the medical market. So the medical licenses all became, you know, comprehensive, as they call them, recreational and medical licenses, which is amazing. So the Missouri market and our model and our law is a model that we think is going to be replicated all throughout the South. And, you know, as further cannabis expansion goes, and, you know, we just surpassed Colorado in monthly sales for the first time last month. So we're very much, you know, for numerical dollars, you know, up there per capita with some of the big hitters. So it's very
exciting. That's pretty amazing considering that Colorado and Denver is kind of lifted up as, you know, the pioneers of this space. Do you want to talk a little bit to that sales number? Because I didn't realize that. Is that based on proximity?
The reason for that really is their prices have fallen because of their regulation issues. Yeah. So the floor of the market has already fallen out, and we think our, you know, the way ours is set up to be sustainable, so that won't happen. We have the right number of cultivators that, you know, licenses out there that there won't be, you know, too much or too few supply at any point.
Got it. Okay. Cool. Well, I'd love for you to dive into some of the individual brands that are owned under the Show Me Organics Collective. I saw you're wearing a Vivid sweatshirt. I think there's a Buoyant Bob, and probably, and then the Deli brand that I maybe am forgetting the name of right now. Yeah. Okay. Can you walk us through, you know, some of the sub brands under the holding company and why that kind of breakout of that brand strategy of fragmenting the brand into a few of these other, you know, whether it's for verticalization or, you know, why did you guys break it into these different brands that you guys operate?
Great question. And, you know, our intent before we were even vertical was to become a vertical operation. So we know that the customer knows no difference between who is vertical and who isn't. It's just based off of what products you're selling, you know, whether it's flower or manufactured products. And so, we decided early on that we were going to set up our house of brands for the long haul and determine, you know, that we are going to have flower at some point. So let's kind of set up the brand so that that makes sense. And, you know, it also all had to make sense, you know, from a corporate standpoint. But I think the biggest thing was getting into the consumer mindset of who are these shoppers and, you know, how do we carve the biggest pie for our brands as possible? And so, you know, knowing that we were Vivid was a brand I inherited before I started and Blue Sage as well. So Vivid is the top tier quality brand that, you know, is for connoisseurs. And, you know, the real mission of the company is centered around the flagship brand that is to innovate on a global scale of cannabis on behalf of, you know, Missouri patients. So kind of using that a little bit of tension and maybe unexpected feeling of, you know, that innovation coming from Missouri, but we believe because of the way that the market's set up that that's plausible. And, you know, we believe, you know, our team is kind of the team to do that. And so Vivid, that's Vivid is sort of our, you know, is the number one flower brand in the state right now. And was the number one concentrate brand before we acquired the cultivation. And so that's the flagship. We've Blue Sage is our dispensary brand, so that's kind of an aside, but the whole from a wholesale standpoint, from a, you know, market standpoint, we have Vivid. Buoyant Bob is so you have Vivid is for a, you know, quality shopper. Buoyant Bob is for a value shopper. And Buoyant Bob's brand has evolved a little bit over time because the quality of our product is better than we ever expected it to be, to be frank. So it went from being a true economy brand to being more of a high value brand is what we call it. And so it's, you know, the tagline is the best bud for your buck. And it lives up to that. So it kind of sits at the middle tier of pricing and delivers on, you know, almost a top shelf kind of quality. And then Missouri's Own Edibles is, you know, we kind of identified that we needed something to, if Vivid is going to be our flagship brand and is inherently niche in its quality and sort of shooting for the top tier, we needed something that could cast a wider net to bring both new people into our brands and also into the category as a whole and help grow cannabis in Missouri. And so that's where Missouri's Own Edibles came in. It was a gummy brand based off of a formulation from Vivid that already was successful in the market, but based around all the fruits grown in Missouri inspired the flavors. So we have a pawpaw fruit, which is a tropical fruit in Missouri that's flavored kind of like a banana, and a mango, and it's delicious. And so we have, you know, some intrigue in the flavors. And then from there, we launched the partnership with the Red Hot Ripplets, which is what got us recognized by the Clio's last year, which was really great. And Red Hot Ripplets are a cultural thing in St. Louis. It is the thing that the chips are cool. You know, they have street cred and they're local only. And so doing an official partnership, we felt like and it turned out to be true, that would really kind of bust the lid open on the market a little bit, in that, you know, you see so many sort of fake partnerships in the cannabis space that, you know, fake Skittles, fake Runts, whatever it might be, that doing an official partnership, especially with a renowned brand, would really help grow the whole business. And so that turned out to be a very helpful push for us and helped us get into, you know, almost every store in the state. And so from there, we have basically our house of brands. Value shopper is Bob. You know, quality shopper is Vivid. And if you're just not sure and just trying, you know, hopefully you get into Missouri's Own Edibles is the kind of way we approach the market.
That's awesome. So you kind of led me naturally into a question that I was going to ask you later about brand partnerships, but it seems like this is a model that you've really kind of mastered, and especially with brand partnerships that are uniquely Missouri or St. Louis inspired. Even kind of talking about, you know, the ability to kind of go out and create additional market share by partnering up with brands regionally. I read that you guys also did a K-Cup partnership with Coffee Ethic. Can you talk a little bit about what makes a successful partnership in the cannabis space for these brand partnerships for other iconic St. Louis or Missouri-led brands, and why that's important to your guys' strategy?
Yes, absolutely. I think it starts from a place of realizing that we don't have the ability to buy mainstream attention in cannabis. That is, we can't buy TV commercials. I can't buy most, you know, websites won't sell a cannabis company ad space yet. And so we're relegated to, you know, in general, this is, you know, starting to break free a little bit, and especially not at home, but we're relegated to sort of B level advertising space. And so with that understanding and barrier in front of us, you know, the brief was, you know, how do we get into the mainstream? How do we get the Fox 2 News is the local news here that, you know, most people watch, or Channel 4 News or whatever the local news is. We're trying to get them to talk about us and do something that force their, you know, their focus, because otherwise, you know, we were never going to get a certain swath and a big portion of Missouri who just doesn't, you know, engage with social media or, you know, is not online. Yeah. And so, you know, that was the sort of beginnings of these partnerships. And we realized that, you know, in lieu of having a bunch of money to go buy equity with a celebrity or, you know, an athlete or something like that, the thing that everybody in the media all loves to talk about in Missouri is all the food and all of the restaurants and you know, our local cuisine gets a lot of love in the mm-hmm. media. And so, you know, all of these things kind of converged. And when we landed on Missouri's Own Edibles, the Riplet partnership was already in the works. And so we designed the brand, you know, with the partnership in mind. And that really did help us to have the first one solidified as we designed the brand, so that Missouri's Own Edibles could kind of be this framework that we design the partnerships around. Because then it just becomes about celebrating our local businesses and our local, you know, culinary innovators. So that's where it started. And I think realizing the sort of breakthrough ability to go through the culinary channel versus trying to innovate a cannabis product that, you know, may not get picked up in the press was where it started. And I think that's why it's proven successful. I think there's probably, you know, a diminishing return over time on those things. So, you know, there's definitely like a first ever shiny moment when you do them. So I think there's, you know, potential for that to expand into other realms, but you know, I think for now it's done well in partnering. I would recommend, you know, any cannabis company consider you know, what advantage you might have by getting in front of a new audience through a partnership like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I want to get into some of the advertising work that you guys have done, because I think as a regional cannabis brand, you know, based on your background, and I believe you also hired a spinoff agency from some friends from GSP, I think called Bandits and something. I can't remember the exact name. It seems like you guys are definitely punching above your weight class from the perspective of the types of campaigns that you're doing. And you have mentioned some of the award-winning work with the CLIAs that have already been recognized. So one ad that really caught my attention was the you'll have to tell me more about it, because I couldn't tell if it was, you know, actually made in jest because you guys intended to try and put it on TV, or if you did it more as a publicity stunt. Either way, I thought it was amazing work, because it really hits home not only on some of the, you know, just ridiculous self-regulation that is happening in this market still to this day, with so many states already adopting legalization and descheduling as a Schedule I narcotic, you know, from the federal level. Just seems like more companies should be opening up faster, especially based on where we are politically with the cannabis movement. But you guys made a really interesting kind of spoof on the boring big pharma kind of traditional stereotypical ads, where it talks about all the side effects, and really, you know, in the spoofing of it, pointed to tragic numbers of how many people die every year from the opioid crisis. And, you know, this has been a year of de-influencing for big pharma and the opioid crisis with the TV shows like Pain Hustlers and Painkillers on Netflix. Can you talk a little bit about the inspiration for that piece of creative that you guys did? Did you ever think it would make it into TV, or was it, you know, kind of designed for PR right from the beginning?
Good question. I think to quickly answer that, I think we have to, if all we are going to do as an industry is ask for opportunities, I don't think they're ever going to open up. So, wow. You know, we came from a place of, can we demonstrate how silly these regulations are by making something that looks like it belongs on TV and gets rejected because of the contents. And so, and also there was a portion of the bill that passed in Missouri says that cannabis cannot be restricted more stringently than advertising, or sorry, than alcohol.
Right.
And so we wanted to test that as well. And all of those things considered, and our company's founding is born out of a local pharmacy business that has existed for three decades. Our owner and president, Leanne Dickerson, has owned those pharmacies in the Kansas City area for a long time. Her son, Boston, is the CEO, and her other son, Montana, is the chief science officer. And so as a family, you know, that kind of comes from the world of pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
And to have the actual 180, because they had that in the within the family, you know, the son's kind of spearheaded an effort to, you know, get the family behind cannabis, and it so happened that it worked. And Jess, the father, had a breakthrough with, you know, being able to sleep for the first time in decade using cannabis. So it really helped kind of be a catalyst in that sort of transfer. And it really ignited the family to the whole mission now is to expand access to, you know, world-class cannabis and education. And so it's been very cool for me to be a part of that, because it's an amazing story to tell. And so, you know, the Ask Your Doctor campaign was born out of a desire to start to draw this parallel, you know, with our actual brand, our corporate brand, Show Me Organics, and, you know, being the one to sort of knock on the door of pharma and say, hey, you know, we believe in the medicinal value of what we're doing, not only, but, you know, we believe we should be able to talk about it and be able to, you know, market it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that was really cool work, and I applaud you guys on it. So let's talk about a platform that is opening up and something really unique that you guys did. So Spotify is one of those first major platforms that have said, hey, you know, Joe Rogan smoking weed on his show, we're going to open it up to, cannabis brands earlier than some of the larger platforms have. And, you guys did a really cool campaign. You actually created a single, and I think maybe some follow-up music for the Buoyant Bob brand. Can you talk a little bit about that campaign and what inspired you guys to actually, you know, you could have done a lot of things with Spotify. Obviously, music is an adjacent, but what made you guys decide to go the route of creating some original songs and going that direction with your Spotify campaign?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think this all actually in my mind went down before the Spotify announcement of we're done cannabis advertising. So this was in genuinely trying to make Buoyant Bob into an artist, into a musical artist. And so Buoyant Bob is, you know, the whole concept behind the brand was to bring the fun of cannabis to the dispensary shelves and be the most fun brand in weed. And, we launched with the campaign with just a song by Buoyant Bob, and it's called The Man Who Got So High. And it came out on the day of legalization is when we dropped the Spotify artist and the YouTube, the music video for it. And we had a big party in St. Louis, and it was the first legal consumption friendly event, public event in St. Louis. So it was on, you know, the week of legalization. We had everyone come out and had an album release party and had, you know, vinyls pressed and did the whole thing. And so the idea for it kind of came from, okay, so Buoyant Bob is the most fun brand in weed. How do we demonstrate that and give, you know, our fans something fun that they can, you know, use and interact with? And the idea of Spotify was a breakthrough for many reasons, because it checked a lot of boxes that we could basically live in an alternate world that's not paid advertising. So we didn't have to abide by a lot of the, not only the limitations on where we could go, but what we could say and how we could design and have artwork and things like that. So it really opened up our creative ability to go on Spotify and do it sort of as a band and as an artist. And so that helped. And you know, I think there's this correlation between, you know, on Cartoon Network, there's two targets, right? There's children and then there's stoners. And we people like animations, and there's a reason for that. And so we really needed to find a way to kind of lean into that. And so that piece of culture is hard to do compliantly. And so we found the sort of music angle. And since then we've partnered with other artists to do a, more acid rock, like Pink Floyd-y version of it. We've done a house version of it now with the DJ. We have a reggae version that's in the works and coming out soon. So Buoyant Bob is now partnering with these local and well-known genres. Sharing credits on Spotify so that if you search Buoyant Bob, it's going to come up. But, it also opened up, the ability for our fans to use the music on Instagram and on their stories and reels, which was really cool too.
That's cool. So I want to talk a little bit more about cannabis advertising in general. So you've put your brands on the map really in the advertising community pretty quickly with some of the Clio awards that you've won. How important is it for organizations like Clio to have a cannabis category to really elevate roles like what you've done in your role as the CMO, but also attract other top advertising and marketing talent to the category?
It means so much, and it can't be overstated. So Michael Kaufman is the one who spearheads the Clio Cannabis Awards. Like, many thanks to him for all of his advocacy and support, because what the Clio's does for us is it allows us to hire a Bandits and Friends and give them a reason to work with us, because we don't have massive budgets. It's not going to be for the dough necessarily is why you do, why you work with a cannabis brand. So having an ability to demonstrate that, and then, historically also having the ability to, have a reference book for what happened and how these brands came to life and tell the story of legalization through that, is very cool as well. And, I think I've mentioned this before, but the sort of hand-in-hand nature of creativity in cannabis and the fact that the Clios give us the nod by supporting the cannabis industry really means a lot, because they are established and they are, an international symbol of creativity. So for them to give us, the sort of vote of confidence really, really means a lot. And it helps us attract a Bandits and Friends. And I've also worked with, my friends, another group spinoff from Good Bee, Powderbox and Adam Reeves' team helped us do the Buoyant Bob song and Donnie Dykowski. So shout out to them. But nice. those teams, I'm able to offer them something more if the Clios exist than, my marketing.
Yeah, a little bit of street cred and the opportunity to submit for awards is kind of nice, right?
Yeah, it helps.
That's cool. Cool. Well, we talked a little bit about this as far as some of the numbers that you guys are doing in Missouri, but I think I read an article or somewhere you quoted where it's an interesting market to break into because of its roots in beer manufacturing and culture, and really talking about how cannabis is maybe putting Missouri on the map in a way to be kind of a destination market, the way that Colorado or Las Vegas has, and how that has the opportunity to change maybe some of the association with the city of St. Louis, or attract a new type of tourism market. Can you just talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not just from the market standpoint, it's really from a cultural standpoint. Beer is baked into Missouri and St. Louis and Missouri specifically, the DNA of the culture and everyday life. So having lived in San Francisco and seen California sober movement and understand the health benefits of living, without alcohol, I think, and also understanding that there are some similarities between, that would allow the sort of California sober culture to take root here, in that people love doing outdoor adventures. It's a beautiful place. Naturally, there's lots of outdoor things to do. So I think those similarities really help. But also from helping mend our economic woes, it really is an important piece. I think there hasn't been such a fast growing industry just pop up in Missouri in a very long time. And so, maybe since Prohibition, actually. And so the ability to just not only see all these dispensaries pop up, but to try to solve for what the future of the cannabis industry is going to be with tourism is something we're very interested in as well. And, hopefully is on the roadmap in the future for us.
That's awesome. I read an article where you got your brand involved as an early adopter of an enhanced AR app called GreenFrame. Can you talk about the importance of digital experience inside of the retail experience? I would imagine walking into your average cannabis store can be somewhat intimidating to maybe new entries to the category, or even, you know, seasoned veterans that know what they like in California, but then walk into Missouri and then have an entire different group of brands kind of shouting at them from the shelves. Can you talk about how digital experiences can help remove some of the friction for the consumer? And also, I imagine the bud tenders are somebody that you guys have to spend a lot of time on an educational relationship with. Can you talk about how technology is maybe solving for some of those things?
Absolutely. Yeah, GreenFrame is a great example of that. And I think, you know, from a Vivid standpoint, trying to be the innovators in the market and seeing something like, you know, the ability to scan a QR code and open up a web app on your phone that you don't have to download anything. I can just see, you know, a 3D scan of the nug that I want to buy and spin it around and get a note about from the grower about how it smells and how it grows and how it tastes and, you know, all of the information right there. It makes it just a little bit more intimate and a little bit easier to digest, because not only am I able to, you know, sit there and hold it and, you know, get a little bit more info than I would on a menu, I can also take it home, and, you know, people tend to sit with it and spend a lot of time on it when they get on there. So, you know, you can explore and bounce between our strains and really figure out, you know, what you want and what you want to be looking for in your cannabis to begin with. And so GreenFrame, you know, and it, you mentioned it's a bud tender's best friend.
Yeah,
it really is. There's so much to learn, and there are all of these, you know, essentially just PowerPoint presentations being presented to them with brand information that they're, you know, expected to remember and help sell. But when you can put something in their hands that they can pull out in front of, you know, a customer that helps them feel empowered and smart, it really is a game changer for sales as well. So,
Wow, that's cool.
It's been very helpful. And it was one of those digital products that when I saw the prototype or the beta for it, I immediately jumped and, you know, I replied to the cold email I got from Tim GreenFrame in about 10 minutes and was like, can we talk today? This is incredible.
Wow.
This is exactly what we need. And so
yeah.
I think at that point he had, you know, been shopping it around, and we immediately hit it off, and he realized sort of our nature of being, you know, fast moving and innovative, and it just was a perfect match from the start. So we've been expanding and doing more and more with GreenFrame, adding video and things like that. So it's been really helpful.
Very cool. So we've talked a little bit of the lack of available advertising options for cannabis. Certain mediums get an oversized amount of the spend because they are able to get around legacy regulations such as outdoor. Us as an influencer focused agency, we've done a lot of work in cannabis simply by necessity for clients that don't have a lot of other options. But can you talk about how your influencer or creator strategy is maybe unique? Because I feel like almost every cannabis company does have a different way that they approach the creator community.
Absolutely. You know, I think, there are levels to this approach. And I think, you know, there will be a transition at some point that we'll have to make that makes, you know, a little bit bigger of a you know, focus on influencer. At the moment, we're really reliant and focused on authentic fit. And so a lot of it comes inbound on people who, you know, tag us, or, you know, we see a jar of our flower in their content or something like that we'll reach out. And the Reggae Bob track is a product of one of those. Josh Heinrichs is a renowned reggae artist who lives in Springfield, Missouri. Wow. And so he is a big fan of our products. And, you know, it kind of worked out serendipitously there. But I think moving forward, the biggest thing is going to be, in the same way that we used Red Hot Riplets as equity to get attention, and that partnership was, you know, leverage for us to get in front of new people from Missouri's own edibles. I think, you know, any new product or new line is going to need, you know, some help getting that equity and getting people to pay attention. So I think, you know, as we expand and grow our lines, you know, of SKUs, there probably will be a deeper focus on influencer to help do that. But at the moment, it's very much, you know, focusing on authenticity.
That's cool. So Missouri has recently passed some pretty stringent rules around packaging for retail, you know, such as having one color, only two logos on the packaging, and having to have it neither of those logos be bigger than the word marijuana written out. It seems a little like when you go to Europe and you go to buy a box of cigars and there's pictures of, you know, people with lung cancer on the cigar box. I suppose it doesn't need to be that graphic. And I understanding that there needs to be some regulation to protect marketing from kids, especially since there have been bad actors in this space. But can you talk a little bit about how you guys have navigated these packaging restrictions and still punch through as a brand?
Yeah, we're working on some things. So the transparently what's going on in the market is we're kind of in a variance period where we're allowed to continue with current packaging. And by the end of April, that will have changed. So everything will be single color, opaque. I think, you know, we have some strategies that I'm not super keen to let slip yet. We'll unveil as that rolls out, but it is frustrating. I mean, I think the biggest thing that it reminds you of marketing fundamentals, like how important colors are and distinctive assets. And if you don't have those, and now you're moving to single color and you were really reliant on a texture or something to be your distinguishing factor, it's going to be really hard moving forward. So I think it's a good reminder. And Boy and Bob is bright blue and bright yellow. So we chose those colors based off of looking at shelves and realizing that, you know, that would pop. So Bob is in a really strong place. Vivid, unfortunately, has like high design textures and things on all the packaging. So it'll have to go single color. But, you know, we're confident that that orange will be helpful for us. And, you know, being one of the first brands on the market and our logo being recognizable is helpful too.
That's awesome. So, we're kind of coming down to the final stretch here. So what has you most excited about the future as your role at CMO at Show Me Organics? What are you most excited about that's coming up in the next 6 months?
So in 6 months, I'm really excited about the whole market in Missouri is exploding right now. And I think we're at a sort of precipice of, we'll look back on this time as the good old days, probably of, you know, being sort of in its infancy still. But there's, you know, inevitable consolidation ahead. And, you know, we're really focused on getting our brands deep rooted in the consumer's hands and focused on, you know, delivering the highest quality products. So, you know, we don't have to necessarily play the consolidation game as much and focus more on, you know, expanding our retail footprint. Yes, but, you know, focused on delivering high quality products and continuing to do that.
That's awesome, man. Well, Tony, thanks so much for coming on the show. This was my first interview with a cannabis marketer on the podcast. Cool. So excited we were able to pop the cherry with your insights and such a cool brand and such an exciting story, and kind of being able to be at the ground roots of a new state's legalization play was pretty exciting to do the research on. So congrats to you and your team for all the award-winning work and all the success you've had so far. And for the audience at home, if you got value from this podcast, we would love it if you subscribed wherever you're listening. Share it with a colleague if you think they would find some of the insights interesting. And leave us a 5-star review on any podcast platform that you're currently listening on. Tony, anything else you want to shout out before we say goodbye to the audience?
No, I thank you, Dylan, for giving us a platform and for actually spotlighting cannabis. It's refreshing.
No, I love it, man. It's we need to see more of this work spotlit. And I think you're a great example of marketers doing great work in the space. So thanks again, Tony, for coming on the show.
Take care. Thank you.